So what's everybody working on?
Holy mackerel, Andy.
No one wants to see that.
No. How much flex track is that?
How many miles of flex track is in there?
Oh, yeah.
That's just unbelievable.
That's going to take 7 years.
Most, this is the pickle plan over here.
Friends don't let friends build duck hunting.
Just because you have the space doesn't mean you have to build it.
I will do it in just a couple hours.
You're listening to The Crossing Gate, the official podcast of the Twin Cities Division of the National Model Railroad Association. The topics and discussions are about the world's greatest hobby, model railroading. Here are your hosts, Thomas Gazier and Ken Zeska. This episode of the Crossing Gate podcast is sponsored by The Firehouse. Hey, modelers, ever been to the circus and seen the clown car? You know, that tiny car that rolls in and 50 clowns pile out. Well, if you love the clown car, hold on to your hat, because brother, have we got the kit for you. Introducing The Firehouse. Yes, The Firehouse! A one-story kit measuring a mere 3x4 inches in HO, but capable of storing as many as 40 of your biggest and best firefighting trucks and equipment. Finally, a place to store all of those fire trucks you have been collecting over the years. The hook and ladder you thought you'd never use in Smallville, USA, because the tallest building is only 2 stories. The horse-drawn fire wagon you bought because you got such a good deal on it. Even your airport crash truck all fit in the amazing firehouse. Think of the possibilities. Rig it up to that actual firehouse spell you bought and trigger it off at random times when your layout is running. Add a sound loop of sirens wailing as your fire crews rush to the next fire. Your guests will love it. Pair it with your Building on Fire kit with realistic smoke and fire generator, and add our optional real water spray for that complete firefighting experience. Or just line up every fire vehicle you own out front and have a fire truck parade. Everyone loves a parade. Every layout needs the firehouse. Get yours today. Psst, Dalmatian not included.
All right, well, welcome to another episode of the Crossing Gate podcast. Tonight I'm joined with Dan Dosa.
Hello.
Lawrence Eggerine.
Hi.
Joe Binnish.
Good evening.
Eric Boone.
Hi, everybody.
And Greg Dahl.
Hello, hello.
And I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Dosa to talk about visualization of your layout. He can bring up this topic and we'll talk about how we applied it or seen it applied or want to. So go ahead, Dan.
Thanks. Well, I kind of thought of it as, oh my gosh, where do I look? And is that a good thing or a bad thing? And the reason it came up was Tom and I were talking about how we kind of plan and lay out the scenes of our layout, how we lay out the actual track design and things, and how this appears visually. And I think that one of the things that always makes me cringe a little bit is when somebody is trying to put everything and the kitchen sink and the bathroom sink and the slop sink all onto their layout at once, because, hey, that's the way Lionel layouts looked when we were kids. And oh my gosh, they had 500 operating accessories and it was just mind blowing and wasn't that incredible. The problem is it doesn't look realistic. It's distracting. And it kind of brought me to thinking about what do we want in the essence of our scenes that draw the viewer really into the central aspect of any scene. And I've seen this where online once where a guy had built a very nice small layout. And the only way I could describe his backdrop was if clouds were fireworks, his clouds were fireworks. And everybody agreed when he said, well, what do you think? And everybody was like, it's distracting as heck. And so, you know, I think about our scenery techniques our layout design and everything as being something that should draw us in to a focal point on a layout where we want to draw things to. And if you think about when you're out and about looking at something, you're looking at the object you're looking at. Everything else becomes background. It becomes fairly unimportant and you barely see it while you're looking at the central feature. And I kind of like that concept in planning out a layout. So that's what I wanted to throw open to you guys was, do you do that? If so, how do you do it? What aspects of track planning, layout design, scenic design, what aspects of those things do you use in narrowing the viewer's focus so that they're not just distracted by this, what I call visual cacophony? So that's what I've got, Tom. Okay. Take it from there.
Well, I was thinking too, like you said, design of like the signature scene. But let's go like to the background. I take my clues from the casinos. I'm sure none of you have ever been at a casino. You're all wholesome gentlemen. But the rules the casino use on their ceiling and floor is they have the carpet is so annoying, you can't look at it. And the ceiling is so boring, you can't look at it. So you just focus on all the machines and what you have on the casino floor. You know, just channeling your vision. And if you apply that to your layout, like I look at things like skirting. Does your skirting have all these patterns and railroad emblems in this? Or is it just plain? And your valance, is that just plain? So you're basically making your layout this beautiful shadow box. Has anyone else seen that or tried that? Or?
Well, Tom, based on the casino analogy there, shouldn't your skirt be something really gaudy, like, you know, purple paisley or something?
No, the floor.
Well, there's other aspects, too. You know, in photography you have and paintings, you have a thing called the three-point perspective. So if you can look at your design and incorporate that into the scenes you want to draw people's attentions to, and think about it later as taking pictures with that three-point perspective. It's subtle, and it may make you move a building or two just a little bit, but then you have to balance operation with it too. Can I move that for the picture, but then, oh my Lord, what does it do with operations? It's an enhancement to be able to help a photo later, but it may hurt operations. So you have to look at it and try every aspect of that.
Can you give a brief explanation of the three-point for photography there?
Well, three-point perspective is you look at it straight on, and what do you see in a diminishing area, and what do you see to the left and the right? They draw your focus into where you want somebody to look. So when you look at a picture, you'll see that sometimes just moving 3 feet to the right, and I'm not talking about a model railroad picture, I'm talking a picture of anything, will just change the perspective that you have on that and create a better visual acuity for your eyes.
Now, Joe, do you
similar
use
to the rule of thirds?
The rule of thirds,
Where you take a picture and you draw two horizontal lines and two vertical lines, you know, each all one third of the picture apart. And you kind of want your focus to be on kind of one of those intersections, mm-hmm. similar to that.
Yes.
And then like Joe Binnish, you have a couple peninsulas or one main one, but you don't have a floor to ceiling backdrop. And so I think you've used taller buildings to stop that viewing, you know, the other side, because people are operating on both sides of that peninsula, but they're two different things, correct?
Right. So one side is the 3rd Street Alley and the other side is the 4th Street Alley. Watching my operators, and sadly, I've never gotten in a session, I've never gotten to operate that part of my railroad, but in watching the operators, they really do focus in on that side and don't even see that the other fella is across the way. And I'm going to enhance that over time by adding buildings against the front of the layout. So they kind of have to peer down the alley because that's the effect that I want to get. The other thing I do is there's one spot where you could have a whole bunch more switching and more buildings and all that kind of thing. And I said, nope, we're just going to make it trees and a couple of houses. And that's it for maybe 5 or 6 feet. And it kind of gives you a rest in between all the busyness of a urban layout.
Do you feel that's where this visual perception. When you get to those areas that are less, you want to draw the eye into your layout to the backdrop. Whereas your industry area, you know, Dan and I were talking about all your details up front. You know, you're not going to detail the building two blocks back, correct?
Right. Well, I'm cheating. My layout's only maybe 20 inches wide, so there's not much we can do there.
Well,
but yeah, you know, it's you don't want to. I'm thinking about this because I'm doing scenery right now, and I'm spreading, you know, the HO scale dirt all over a big section. I'm thinking this is a complete waste. I'm wasting materials, but I've got to finish this spot because it's layout. So I'm wishing I had the 8-inch wide layout and I didn't have to worry about it.
Like Luke says, don't build a layout this large.
Exactly.
Greg, have you used anything like that? And, you know, for forcing people to look at certain parts of the brewery or your auto plant or.
You know what? I haven't. And I'd be the first to admit this is probably one of the biggest failings I have on a layout. Is not designing. When I designed my layout, it was all based upon the track plan, you know, reading Armstrong's book and laying out and figuring out what kind of operations we wanted. I laid out, and I think a lot of people might do this, is they lay out the exact track plan. You know, do I need a number six, a number eight? How long is the passing siding going to be? What I didn't think about is composing the scene. What does the entire scene look like? Buildings. It has struck me over the last several years. There's some guys, especially you can find them on the internet, with some of the smaller layouts who have really composed the entire scene. So like the industry parking lot for the automobiles looks like it belongs there. The gates for the fencing is in the right place. And the fencing looks just looks right to me. I don't know how else to describe it. And I'm trying to shoehorn this stuff in sort of after the fact, and it just does not look good.
Trying to cram too much in?
I don't think so. I think that is a big sin. I'm trying not to cram a lot of stuff in. Yeah, people look at sort of like, you know, some of these layouts with, hey, if I just add more detail, I'll have a better looking scene or a better looking layout. And I can tell you that just doesn't hold truth. It just becomes a big caricature of stuff. I don't think it's that. No, it's just, I wish I had spent a little more time on what does the whole thing look like, or at least what this area, this, you know, 2-foot by 6-foot area, what does that look like?
I have to disagree with you, Greg. I think you're being really unfairly harsh on yourself. First, you've got the space to be able to work that in and make it look very plausible. That's all there. The way when I've operated on your layout, the way I see it is I've got a trackside perspective that there's a whole huge amount of this real estate that's on the other side, that's on the street side. But I'm not looking at the street side. I'm trackside. I'll take your auto plant as a good example. You know, you're talking about gates. You put a gate up at the front of the plant where the trains come in. You don't need anything else. The backdrop of the building, of that plant, really is sufficient. Now, if you start cramming a bunch of other things into that scene, I think you would really detract, but I don't think it detracts the way it is. The parking lot, and having grown up next to a Ford plant, I can tell you, the parking plant is on the other side of the building, away from the tracks. So you don't see it. The administrative building, that's on the other side. This is where the stuff comes in. And I really think you captured it well. Likewise, I think the brewery, same thing. And, you know, Cary Avenue is a wonderful little aesthetic of its own as a switching district. And I think that what you were very disciplined in doing was creating these large industries that don't require a bunch of superfluous details or features. They stand on their own. And you've got enough space to get to them that you can fill in other details and develop those scenes in ways that they're not distracting, but they're harmonious with your concept. So I think the bones you've created are really, really sound and solid.
I'll send you the $20 later, Dan. Thank you.
that was a $50 comment.
But Greg, do you think, so you designed your layout, you know, we were with you in... You designed it for ops. I understand that. Your layout operates wonderfully. It flows. It does everything. Do you think you'd feel this wouldn't be such such a wrong way if you designed in just one portion and made a signature scene, like we're talking about, that this is the scene, your bridges, your amazing bridges you make, that everyone looks at, you know, like Larry said, this is the 3 points. This is where everyone takes a picture. You know, it's the rock cut on the Split Rock Mighty. Everyone takes a picture there. Do you think that would have helped in the design phase? And we're talking to Eric here, of creating the signature scene. Or I know a lot of guys, they put it at the entranceway. When people walk in, there's Tehachapi Loop, there's Horseshoe Curve, there's Grand Central. Do you think that would have helped or something, or been along the lines if you designed a nice bridge scene?
Maybe. I've, since the pandemic started, and I don't think you guys have been over since then, actually, I ripped out, or I moved. The first thing you saw when you came into my train room was a treadmill. So I moved that out and moved it to a separate room. So then when you walk in, as Dan mentioned, I have this peninsula that juts out called, I call it Cary Avenue. It's got the finished buildings on it now, and it's got the roadway, the parking meters, the automobiles. And I like that. I think Dan is right. You know, having and, you know, laying that out and putting that there and having that as sort of the first thing you walk in and as a signature scene, you're right in the fact that this is sort of a gritty downtown, you know, it's an industrial area. You know, there are no farms here. There's nothing. That's the first thing you see when you walk in. And I think it does. It sets the scene. You know, it's like a movie or a play that you go to, right? You have to set that expectation to the viewer, right? When you walk into your room, all you see, I mean, are ore cars, right, Tom? So it's just, you know where you are. And I think planning that out, yeah, that would help a lot.
Tried to convey this. You can have the signature scene and have something that looks incredible for the picture and wows everybody, but it doesn't fit into operating either. You know what I mean? So there's a delicate balance. If you're going to show off your layout to non-model railroad people, then you want to catch their eye. Model railroaders, for the most part, that are into operations, give me a good solid track plan and I'm not going to see that yellow stripe is a quarter of an inch off on the road. It's like, no, sorry, we're driving a Jeep, you know? And there's a delicate balance. You know, what aspect do you want for your layout? Is it going to be primary model railroaders that come in and see it? Or are you going to want to build contest quality models to maybe get published in a magazine to show somebody how to do that? All those things fit in, and you've got to figure out where you fit in to that. And so if your railroad operates great, Greg, that's all it needs to do. That's my 3 minutes.
So back to you, Joe, Mr. Binnish, because your layout is totally designed for operations. But it seems to me now you keep adding more that you're trying to get this visual perception. And I see in places that you've done what Larry says is 3 point. And what Dan says, you're drawing your attention to areas. How are you doing that now, even though you've got, you know, your layout is built for operations? Are you going to add to that to certain areas or try to do it for all?
There's a mental plan I have, which is frightening. But I've been struggling with, and this is clearly a first world problem, do I want to get the realistic, so if you take a picture, it looks like the real thing? Because I'm not there. But if you take a picture, it looks like a really nice model railroad in spots. And I think that's what I want to do. And so the signature is I want it to be urban, upper Midwest, you know, Minneapolis, if you know enough about the track plans. But there isn't anything that screams that says this is the Hammond-St. L in 1953. So it's kind of a, I'm not sure if I'm getting where I want to get, but I'm on the journey, so who cares, kind of thing. So I guess I don't really have an answer for you.
You know, you guys are making me rethink what I'm, you know, I'm kind of looking at a reiteration of my design. You're talking about the signature scene. The one thing I like about my current plan, or the one that I've had drawn, is when you come down the stairs, the first thing you're going to see is this 42 stall roundhouse and the big shop facilities. It is like the signature scene. But, you know, after kind of doing some operation at Joe's and dealing with, you know, having these little switching districts and wanting to add that and rethink my plan. Well, that kind of moves that a little more around the corner. And, you know, you go around and you see it, you know, as you walk your way around. And then kind of what you see at the bottom of the stairs is kind of the boring part.
There's a lot of operations in an engine facility. Plus, yeah. It's visually cool.
Oh, yeah. It is. It's like you said, it's all the givens and druthers, though. It's that balance between the signature scene, the aesthetics, and the operation.
Yep. That's delicate.
You know, there's nothing wrong with a boring scene that's well executed.
True.
I've used this line before, talking about layout scenes, is the line from the movie Witness when the woman says to Harrison Ford, "You look plain." I almost want my layout to look plain. I don't want this scene of there's three bridges and three trains crossing the same gorge at the same time. To me, that's been done. It's corny, quite frankly. I'm looking for something that looks ordinary, but mm-hmm. looks exactly what you see as you're driving down the road. And look over and there's some track.
Yeah.
It's not fancy. It's not elaborate. It's not complex. It's simple.
Well, it's like if you put the gruesome casket and the pickle factory and the Victorian houses all kind of next to each other, all these really kind of one of a kind of sorts, awesome, you know, structures. But if you put them all together, it's just not believable. You need the ordinary.
What? Yeah. You need, you know, about 90% ordinary.
Yeah.
To 10% unique, if that. Right, yeah. And I think that's tough because everybody wants the model unique. Well, I got that Victorian house and I'm going to make it up like the house in Psycho because that would be so cool. And it's like, well, what about just a line of row houses?
Yeah.
In the city that bore you to tears because they're so ordinary.
You know, in one other town, I just saw this picture. I just ran across this picture the other day, and it's for a place that makes the precast concrete pipes and that kind of thing. And it's right next to my main yard. You know, it's just, you know, other kind of right at the end of the yard. So it would definitely be on the layout. The office building for this structure basically looks like a gigantic round concrete pipe stood up on end, almost like the Mario Brothers. Thank God they didn't paint it green. But it's like, that's just one of those weird oddball buildings, but it was there. It's going to be there.
So Larry, I think I agree with all that. Larry, you talked about Greg's layout being very good at operations, and that's fine. I mean, we're all operators. We all enjoy that great aspect. So as operators, and I'll start with you, Larry, if you went to a layout, what visual perceptions or anything would you appreciate? That, you know, because I appreciate sometimes the work that somebody's put into their grain elevator, this, that. But as an operator with your car cards, what would you try to make your operators notice?
For me, it's the subtleties that I see. You know, if you spend some time on a scene hyper detailing something, you know, whether you've added some different coloring to static grass, and it's not all one color. It might be, you know, patches that make it look like it's stained underneath. You know, it's those things as the modeler you see while you're operating. And typically, when you're in the middle of the operating session and you've got your balancing car cards on five fingers, okay, you've got a throttle hanging over your neck and you're trying to figure out what you're going to do, you're not going to see that. But when you take a break and or the first time you visit the layout, you see those things, they draw your attention. For instance, you guys all know my layout's more about operations and fun. Okay. When I started the scene for the Schnossage Brothers Industrial Refuse Facility, it's a meatpacking and industrial refuse facility. So, but when I started that scene, a guy came over with a small brontosaurus. Okay. It's like 1/195th scale. So we were doing a water pour. You'd have to see it, but where the spill came out of the building. When I was pouring the water, I stuck the brontosaurus in. He became part of the story. All right. So the story is he swam through the spill. It was just a gecko. And he blew up in size. So now he's the scale 35 feet long.
I don't show that to guys. The first time they go switch the Schnossage Brothers facility, they just look down at the water and they see it. And they bust out laughing and say, what is this? Now you can explain the story. So it's, in my case, it's that little subtlety. And in the swamp, we've got college football rivalries that go on. Gators fighting Seminoles and Seminoles fighting Gators and Tigers fighting Seminoles and Gators. And they're all little bitty vignettes that are in there. And I don't point them out, but guys, when they're working over in that area, they'll look down and say, oh, look at that. That's cool. It's that subtlety when you're operating that catches somebody's eyes. It's the little things that are seemingly unimportant. We put them in as a joke, but they catch everybody's eyes, the guests and the operators. And I don't go around and say, hey, look at this, look at this, look at this. I let them find it. So I think that that's equally as important. And Greg, like you were saying, you know, the gates are not 100% right or whatever. Just the fact that the gate's there, the non-model railroader is going to see it. They're going to say, hey, look, he took the time to put a gate going in there that has to be open. To them, that's a huge deal. The model railroader is going to say, oh, crap, I got to move the gate. I think that those are the things I see. Like when we had a guy at our club that just, he loved doing scenery. And we came back in a week, he had done 35 feet of scenery and done it to a level that was unbelievable. And we're still finding stuff that he put in there 5 years later. It's that that catches everybody's eye, the guest and the operator. I probably elaborated more than I should, but
I like the points you made. That is what I wanted to do is for operators, does some of these visual perceptions draw you into the scene, you know, which for what I'm trying to do to convince you, you're hauling ore in northern Minnesota, I bring up all the trees, you know, Joe in an industry. So, Greg, does any of this, you know, go back to your layout? Because I think the huge auto industry plant itself and the huge brewery draw you in. And I know you're putting more details on the roof because an auto plant is a basically square box. Anything you've tried to use to draw people into the story that you're somewhere in west of St. Louis?
Yeah, and that's become, the answer to your question is no. What I've struggled with is the fact that, I mean, you know, you and I talked one time about, well, could you put like a picture of the arch in the background, right? That would tell you immediately that you're somewhere in the St. Louis area. And if it's far enough away, you could do something like that. But what I find on a lot of places is Joe was talking about how, you know, you wouldn't know that this is the MNCNL, right? You might, especially if you're from the Twin Cities area, you might know this is Minneapolis, but you wouldn't know, you know, unless he points it out, it's going to be the MNCNL. And I think that's true of a lot of layouts where, you know, you sort of execute it to a certain level, but then how do I know that your iron ore layout is not in northern Michigan? Or how do I know? And so for me, you know, this gritty industrial, you know, progressive rail type of operation, it could be in Chicago. It could be Milwaukee. It could be, you know, a thousand places. And actually, I've tried to use that to my advantage because then I don't have to try to explain it because somebody from Kansas City looks at it and goes, yeah, that looks familiar. It's not Kansas City, but I recognize that. And, you know, the same with a guy from Des Moines and a guy from Chicago. You know, they'll all see, you know, that's familiar, but maybe not exactly what I'm used to.
I think you find that there's, Greg, your point is really good. I think that there is a balance between creating Walther's Anytown USA and creating a scene which is in many ways ubiquitous. I actually ran into this when I was working on the Hennepin line section of my layout. And I'm up looking around Northeast Minneapolis thinking, well, there's got to be some things here that are going to really plant this layout in Northeast. And the answer is, there isn't. The structures are little two and sometimes three story generic structures. They're not particularly unique. You know, there's really in the whole area, there are a few industries that are relevant, but unless you know the railroad, you wouldn't know them. So yeah, it could be a fairly generic part of the upper Midwest. But I think that, again, if it's executed well, you can use other things, as we've talked before in these podcasts, you can use signage and other things to bring it back and plant it at your locale.
And I think, Greg, you've done that too now, started with some highway signs, you know, that'll say off to what Lindbergh Airport and some St. Louis landmarks. You know, maybe that's the visual perception for operators if you're trying to get them into an area. Joe, what would you say to someone if you didn't have MNCNL engines and cabooses, what would they think of your layout? Where would they think? And you tell them, okay, you're somewhere in the Midwest. Where is it?
I just think they would say a generic big city somewhere, Chicago or Milwaukee or whatever. I mean, they may pick Minneapolis just out of luck. But I think that Dan made an interesting point. I think we want to model the generic unless we're trying to do the specific, unless you're going for that signature passenger train or the signature, you know, this is the arch in the background of this yard, or, you know, pick your spectacular scene, Horseshoe Curve or the Thomas Viaduct if you're a B&O guy. Otherwise, the railroads were kind of on the back end of the town, right? And they were doing work, not trying to look pretty. So that's what we're trying to model, is the work part of it.
I like that thought, Joe. And that's really good. The other is, Tom, you asked the question about what function it all serves on a layout. And I think, to me, it's the set in which the story unfolds. As an operator, I just want the set to be believable so the story can unfold. The story unfolds in my mind. You know, I'm a participant in this story. And Joe, your layout does that nicely. I get down there and it's like, I don't know those exact alleys, but I know where I am in town. And I know how those tracks wound their way into those alleys and what a challenge it was to operate those. And it's like, your layout draws me into that. I think that, to me, is what I'm looking for the scenery to do, I'm not looking to necessarily have somebody wow me that they built this incredible level of detail of scenery, as much as I'm just looking for a good movie or a good story set or movie set in which I can let my imagination take over and I can run the trains.
But it's a lot more fun to run and operate a train through good scenery and good looking scenery than it is through not scenery.
Well, and that's the thing, is that do you find it, and I ask everybody, do you find it distracting when the scenery is not well done? Sometimes I'll have to be honest and say, yes, I do. I find it distracting, or I'm kind of a realism nut. I like a story that unfolds that feels realistic to me and plausible. And so I can roll into a story like that. Other people are different on that. But do you find that layouts you've operated on have enhanced or detracted from the story?
You're kind of high maintenance.
Yeah, go ahead.
I am.
I would say for myself, as long as the, you know, the distractions aren't cluttered, you know, if someone has crud all over their layout, that I would find that distracting. But I tend to kind of almost, when I'm getting into switching, in particular, I almost tune it out, although it is really cool for, you know, Joe on his layout's got some, the start of those aisleways or, you know, those caverns of the 4th Street and 3rd Street that you're starting to take shape there. And that really, I found a little bit that does start to pull me into the scene. But yeah, for a lot of it, you almost tune it out. The unfinished scene, it doesn't seem to bother me. As long as someone doesn't have like a can of orange spray paint sitting there and a bunch of paint brushes and other miscellaneous clutter all over the place, I'd be okay. Of course, we all love to see a finished scene, and I do. It's kind of what mode you're in. If you're in the train watching mode or if you're in the operating mode, it's a different mindset.
And Larry, so modeling, like you said, the Schnauzer's factory, do the operators kind of just look past that and get to the car cards and waybills and switch lists?
Yeah.
You know, it's just, they don't really, you know, okay, I got to deliver this. Okay, so they do.
Yeah, it's typically the new guys that come around, and then you're trying to figure, it's a small layout. So it's not hard to figure out that shelf side yard is over here on the shelf and Bubbleton yard is over where the big sign that says Bubbleton is. You know, that's not too hard. And the Schnossage building has a big sign on it. So when you say you have to take something from shelf side and move it to Schnossage, well, there's only one way around that. But they're still wanting to go see what they've got coming ahead of them. You don't want to just come up on an area and figure out what you have to do. You know, if you're an operator, you're planning ahead. Yeah, the first time in, they will catch the subtle details. After that, let's operate the layout. There's a balance to it. You know, there really is. Again, like I said earlier, it depends on what you want to do. If you're more into the operations, then you're not going to necessarily hyper-detail an area. And it doesn't make it wrong. It just makes it what you do. I mean, there's areas on my layout that I had guys do scenery on that had never done scenery, obviously. So and we're all smiling because we've all done that.
Yeah, or we've all seen that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's areas I'm fixing as I get in the mood. They're not horrible. They're not my standard. You know what I mean? And for the average layout 25 years ago, they would have been perfectly fine. Again, the average layout. I'm not trying to build a showpiece, but it's just a personal thing for me that I kind of want things done, maybe to a little higher standard. Does that make sense?
Yes. No. I think we all understand that. Greg, do you think like we could take some cues? I always thought model railroaders, it's like a play from the set designers. If we've all been to live plays, and while there's actors on the screen, they're changing the scenery on one half or another. So there's things that draw your eyes. I mean, the greatest people who do this are magicians, right? I'm always like, okay, where can I draw someone's eyes to keep them away from Lake Superior not having water? You know, do you feel anything like that? Like you could, you know, pick little segments on your layout that, okay, this is where I want to concentrate, like Cary Avenue.
Just before I answer that, I want to go back to something Larry just mentioned about upgrading his scenery. And I think one thing that's important for people to remember too is scenery is one of the easiest things you can upgrade. If your benchwork stinks, trying to upgrade your benchwork is a pain. Or your track or your wiring, trying to figure out what's wrong with your wiring and fixing that is a pain. But scenery is actually one of those things, you know, a good putty knife to scrape it off, rip down some of your plaster. But this is actually one of the areas where you can go ahead and, you know, do the best you can right now, but don't worry about it being perfect. And you can always come back. You can always replace a building. I started out with everything being mock-ups. Every single building was a mock-up. And then you come back and, you know, as Larry mentioned, as it suits me, as I get interested in something, I go back and I replace one of the buildings. And so I think that's very important to remember. And now I've completely forgotten what you asked.
Well, that's fine. No, I like what Larry said. I think that is it. People always expect scenery to be the greatest magazine cover they're going to do. And it's easier to go over, but you can't redo benchwork and wiring and track as easy. But I'll go back. Let's go back to like your layout. You said this and Joe said this, and I'll probably ask you other guys too about this familiar views. And I asked Joe about, okay, would people know it's MNCNL? Well, they don't have to, because the perception, as Dan says, they're going to guess the Midwest. They're going to guess the largest city because it's ubiquitous buildings. And that's genius. I think that's what a lot of us trying to strive for. Would you know mine's in northern Minnesota? No, but you know it's in some northern clime hauling ore. Where, you know, Minnesota, Michigan, Ontario. And you get, so Eric, you know, you're coming up to yours. Are you going to add anything in there? If somebody walked down in your basement and there wasn't anything on the layout that said Pier Marquette, would they know they're at the Pier Marquette?
Well, because it's, you know, older, I mean, people from the area, yes, would probably recognize some scenes, although a lot's changed in, you know, 60 plus or 70 years. That's the debate. Like, you know, there's some signature possibilities. Obviously, the one ad would be the Grand Rapids, Michigan. They had a big Union Station with a gigantic six train, you know, train shed. But that was torn down in the late, very end of the 50s. So do people remember it anymore? Not so much. There are some possibilities that the town at the other end of the line is Holland, Michigan. Well, you know, Holland, of course, screams Dutch. You know, there's some neat things like the windmill gas station. You know, if I were to put and then the sign with the that's in the shape of the wooden shoe that says Holland. You know, so there are some scenes like that, some things that I could put in that would definitely plant the layout. And to some extent, you know, I'll do that to some extent. If some of the things weren't near the railroad, so I've got to debate whether I use a little modeler's lights that are the geography bender to kind of put them there. You know, and I haven't quite gotten to that standpoint. But
did the Pier Marquette have standard depot, kind of standard depot plans?
Not really. No, most of their depots, you know, either pre-existed or they were unique. I mean, being part of this, eventually part of the CNO, but, you know, controlled by the Advisory Mechanical Committee, they eventually did adopt kind of that standard light gray with white trim scheme. So there's some depots that'll be like that. But in all reality, I'm only going to have one like that on my layout. All the others are unique. I think maybe, okay, two. The others are a little more unique.
The Pier Marquette, when I think of the Pier Marquette, the first thing I think of is their ferry operations.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, to me, I would think, you know, something that would really anchor, no pun intended, the layout is that there are very few Great Lakes rail ferry operations outside of the Pier Marquette.
Yeah, you had the Grand Trunk and you had the Ann Arbor.
Yeah, it's very, very limited. So, you know, to me, it's like Pier Marquette. Yeah, that the car ferry operations really scream Pier Marquette.
Mm-hmm.
They're really just completely in keeping with what you're doing. It's a cool thing to be able to model.
Yeah, for me, you know, it is, and it's tempting. I kind of think if there was another area of the railroad that I would pick to model, it would be, you know, Ludington, Michigan, and the car ferry operations. And, you know, the neat thing is, you know, you go a little east from there, you run into, you know, Baldwin, which is a junction, and Reed City, which is another junction with Pennsylvania. And there was, you know, a lot of newly discovered oil in that area at the time. But so there weren't pipelines yet. So it all went by train. There's a lot of interesting stuff there. But then, you know, there's some, like anything else, there's the things you lose. I lose the Berkshires, because that's the other thing people kind of think of when they think of the Pier Marquette is the Berkshires.
Yeah.
Well, that track up there wasn't, and the bridges weren't strong enough to handle those. So they didn't make it up there. And then, of course, for me, you know, like I mentioned, the previously mentioned the signature scene of the 42 stall roundhouse, it would be a little far away. It'd be a little bit of a stretch, a little bit too much of a stretch of the geography bender to go ahead and kind of put those scenes in the same layout, unless I had a much larger layout. And that scene is important to me because, you know, that's my grandfather worked there. It's tempting. It's a really cool operation, and it's tempting at times, but it's like, nope, I kind of like what I picked. So.
Well, here's a question for you. Is there any way, without modeling the car ferry operation, to hint at it? You can hint at it in terms of your operational concept, but is there any way to hint at it visually on your layout? Now, I'm not saying there is or isn't. I'm just curious because I'm thinking, all right, that could be, it could be interesting if there's a way that would convey this is heading toward a car ferry operation here. Well, that would be kind of cool.
Billboards.
Yeah, billboards or signage.
Yeah. Because, you know, it was also an auto ferry. They put parked cars on top. You know, I could have signs along the U.S. highway, say in Holland or Grand Rapids, you know, save time, take the car ferry, that kind of thing. I mean, I'm just finding an example of one.
So, like, Greg and Joe and you guys, we'll go back to, like, this perception and visualization and what is foreground or background. So, in the foreground, I always call it, your model is, it's a 3-foot model. But I don't know many model layouts that are 3 feet wide anymore at any point, you know, put it away. So I know maybe you car guys can say, like somebody always said, that's a 200-foot car because 200 feet away looks great up close. You can see the Bondo and the structure and everything and whatever. But you think that 3-foot rule applies to where you want a detail? And like Dan says, the background, you just want it there so you know it's there. Does that help you visualize their people's perception to draw them down to the front of the layout where the tracks are?
It's kind of like, do you detail the interior of the building that's back against the backdrop 18 inches, 2 feet away? You can, and there may be people who will see it, but it's a lot more effective to do it to put that level of detail in something close where people can get up close and rub their noses against the siding and really see what's going on. And naturally, as your eye works in such a way that when things get farther away, they get hazy and less distinct. And you can cheat and use that so that, you know, no, I don't detail stuff against the backdrop because it's farther away. And theoretically, we should change colors too, right? But that's another can of worms that we don't want to get into.
That's the next podcast.
Exactly. I'm busy that day.
Busy, yeah. Greg, what do you think of the 3-foot rule?
I think Dan actually has a phrase that summarizes it perfectly, and that he always talks about sustaining the illusion, right? You have this illusion that you're operating a real size, a full-size railroad. You can see the track. If you put the effort into, you know, painting your track and stuff, then the other stuff, you know, around it just needs to sustain the illusion that it's there. You don't need, like on your layout, your northern Minnesota, how many trees do you have on your layout? You know, I mean, in theory, you should have 5,000, right? I mean, you've been up to the forest up there. I mean, it's just packed in there. But you only need enough to give the implication that there's a forest. And people's minds will fill in a lot of those details. Like one of the things I was struggling with was Woodland Scenics has come out now with those electrical poles with the lines pre-strung, right? And it's like, oh, that takes away so much of the effort, you know, to try to put like easy line or something and attach it to the old. But then I started thinking, it's like, do you really need the electrical lines? Or if you have the poles there, will people just look past that? And will their mind fill in the electrical wire for you? Because if anybody's...
Yeah.
And back to something that Larry said, if you're operating, is that going to become something for people just to hang themselves up on and rip out of your layout and, you know, cause a zillion headaches? If you're building a diorama, sure. But on an operating layout, do you even want that level of detail? Because it may make things a lot worse. And I think you're right, Greg. I think that people will fill in the detail. I think the first is the old credo in medicine, do no harm. So don't do something that distracts people. Eric mentioned this. You know, you got a bunch of junk all over your layout. You're going to have an operating session. Clear it off. Put it in a box. If you're going to do your scenery, don't do it in a way that detracts. Take the time to paint your track. Make it look a little more realistic. Vary your ground cover. Don't make it look like your layout, every square foot of it runs through a golf course. You can do these things. Then second is, yeah, spend your time detailing your foreground and make your background less detailed so that the eye is drawn to the foreground. To me, it's you know, those are rules that will work very well with most any layout. And you know, your point was good. Why would you detail up the interior of the back of a layout? I guess Joe said that. Why would you detail up the background of a building and the interior of it that can barely be seen when you wouldn't see it in real life? Because now the distances are increased over that short distance of, you know, foreground to background on our model railroads.
I want to go to Larry next on this, but Dan, I want you to bring up the most important part of, like what Greg said, people stringing the power lines with wires. Tell everybody who really appreciates that.
Spiders.
Yes, you've done half
spiders
the work.
Like those lines. They like them because that's a great place to spin webs.
Yes, and what Greg said about the trees, the number of trees, I don't know how many they are, but when I die, the last tree this layout needs won't be made. So Larry, they brought up the point of like your mind will fill in the details. And you've created this thing with this even imaginary industry, but it's, you know, operational, it's served. It's just, you picked this crazy thing. Do you have, I mean, the people seem to pick this up right away. And how have you got this across to them, what the Snoshes brothers are doing without having to like a half hour safety briefing?
I don't do a half hour safety briefing because The Sausage Brothers are infamous for ignoring every safety aspect that can be created.
And just follow that to the end, right?
Basically, what I do is, if you're coming over for an op session, when I give you the job sheet will tell you what you're doing and why. So in other words, if you're picking up a tank car from Shelfside Yard, it'll say that that's coming in from Albany, New York. Okay. And it was delivered to Shelfside. Your job as the local is to pick that up and take it to the Schnossage Brothers plant. And it, there'll be a little joke note. Like, you know how, have you read a Rapido manual?
Yeah.
They're hilarious.
They're
hilarious. Like, yeah, if you remove the cover and 900 pieces fall out, it's not our problem. You know? Yeah, it, things like that. So it's, I put that in for those that don't know it. And then I'll try to change it up. You know what I mean? So guys that think they know it, that and the job sheet will tell them to do something, but it may tell them that the B end of the card has to be in the back. And the reason is Bubba doesn't want to walk around the front because he's got a bum leg. And you can add those little subtleties in the job sheets. I don't use car cards. I use switch lists. Okay. So then they're in the notes on the switch list. That's how that mind fills in that blank. Once you've operated a couple of times, you know what the basic industries are there for. You know what they're getting. And then it becomes the quest of, okay, well, why is it this way this time? And of course, I never stage the car so that it's the easy way for them to put it in when it's the B end has to be in the back or anything. You know, it's pretty much deliberate efforts to make them work and think. You know, and I'll put things in like Bubba's paying extra for this because he'd rather pay us than the doctor to fix his leg. It's just little things. And you're right. You're right about the spiders and the things. You got to look at your layout and say, where is a hand going to go in with a stick to try to uncouple that car? And, oh, are they in his way? Yeah. And then you rely on it. Now, I will say that the stuff, and I forget where we got it, is some guy out of New Hampshire or Vermont, the Easy Line, we did some with. That stuff's great because, man, you could stretch that stuff 3 feet and it goes right back. If you're going to use it, do something like that. And it's coated. So when the spiders go on, you can just take a makeup brush and wipe them off and, you know, they're happy. Of course, I have a pet gecko, literally have a pet gecko in there. And he takes care of the spiders for me. So I live in Florida. We have 49 million types of bugs, you know, and they're all native to here.
Can you send me a gecko? Because I have lots of spiders.
Yeah, too.
You got to keep them warm. You got to keep them watered. That's the trick.
Can I put a Split Rock Mining sticker on them or something? Yeah, right. A number on them.
My pet gecko, I'm not exaggerating, 7 inches long. He looks like a little lizard running around. And he's completely terrified of me, but I don't have a problem with spiders. None whatsoever.
Good for you. All right. So let's wrap this up. If anybody's got final points, and we'll go with Dan and Larry, Eric, Greg, and Joe. So Dan, why don't you tell us anything else you want to point out about this?
Well, I think it's all been covered. I'll come back to my line that Greg quoted, which was, I just want the scenery, the design, and all of it to sustain the illusion. And, you know, if the illusion is well sustained, I enter the story. And if I enter the story, I am perfectly happy.
I like that. Larry?
Yeah, I like that too. That's great. The other thing you've got to design, and it was alluded to in here, is, are you building a diorama for a display? Are you building an operational layout? So everything we've talked about comes into consideration as to scenery. Is it going to get in the way of the operator, or is it going to enhance the operator? I mean, all of those things come into play, and it's an interplay, and every layout's going to be different. Nobody's is going to be exactly the same. So build it for you and be happy with it.
I agree. Eric?
Yeah, that's going to be the balance, the balancing act for me. It's that trade-off between the looks and the operation. And it's with anything, it's givens and druthers. And, you know, I'm going to go through that here as I'm laying out this version of the plan. And, you know, obviously, the good thing is, you know, it's not too hard to change it if I build it and it's not going to be right. You know, it's, hey, don't be afraid. So, you know, myself, go out and do it, try it. If it doesn't look right, this is a hobby. It's a never ending. It's a never ending project. You're never done with a model railroad. So
never, not allowed. Greg.
You know, I honestly don't think I have anything more to add. I mean, I think those guys, both Dan and Larry and Eric have all summed it up really well.
Yeah. I like that sustained illusion. And Joe.
Well, boy, you know, Greg kind of put the end to it right there by saying that those guys did a good job. So I'm just going to not say anything.
Just going to end it like that. All right. I think exactly. We all agreed about foreground and background. There's lots of examples in the real world and other layouts. And I like the yin and yang of operations and scenery. And I think you can do both, but a lot of people put too much emphasis on one or the other to really get good at the one or the other. But I like drawing you into the story, and sustaining the illusion is going to be the mantra we have going forward. So, all right. Thank you guys again for another great chat, and everyone gets to say goodbye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Right.
Perfect.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. I'd have to get into my box of failures over there.
The only consistent gripe has been the opening of the show.
Why do they always gripe about me?
If you don't have trolls, you're nobody.
I haven't heard that in a while, Joe.
That's the Joe rule.
Yeah.
Oh, that hurts.
You've been listening to The Crossing Gate, the official podcast of the Twin Cities Division. You can find us on Facebook in our group, the Twin Cities Division of the NMRA. You can email us at tcdnmra@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to subscribe for future podcasts.